Welcome to the Work the System podcast, where we help entrepreneurs make more and work less using systems. And I'm your host, Josh Bonger. And today I have a special guest. I have Ryan Cote. Ryan is the Director of Digital Services and partner at Ballantine. It's a third generation family-owned direct mail and digital marketing company. And Ryan, I'm excited to have you on and kind of pick your brain and find out the latest and greatest in marketing through all mediums. So, as we get started, why don't you give us the intro? How did you get into this line of business?
Yeah, thanks, Josh. Happy to be here. So, yeah, I've been in marketing all my life. I went to college for marketing, and my family business here is marketing, direct mail and digital. Though that said, I did not come into the business right out of college. I actually had two jobs before coming into the business. And in like 2003, I think it was, my brother joined the company, and then the seed was planted, I guess you can say. I started thinking about it more and more, and approached my father and my uncle. And you know, I said I want to come into the business. Now the issue was they did not have a marketing department. They were getting sales just from referrals and just outbound sales efforts like cold calls. And so they essentially created a marketing role for the company. So I was the marketing director of directing myself, department of one, and did that for about 10 years. Doing everything from the website, digital, trade show management, doing a little bit of sales myself, just everything marketing, you know, just focusing on how can I get more leads for the company. And then that role morphed into, we started offering digital to our clients, and that's morphed over the last 5 years into just myself. But now we have 12 people on the team, mm-hmm. and we do everything from social media to SEO, paid search, content. And we still do a ton of direct mail. That's still mm-hmm. a major part of our business.
And so that was 2003 when you started?
Yes.
Wow. Okay. So you've been involved in digital marketing for a long time and seen it from the very beginning. That's very cool. That's yeah. Neat. So what was the vortex like? Say, I hear this a lot because I work with a lot of family companies. The vortex of not working in the family business and then kind of everyone slowly working in there. How many people in your family work in the business?
Well, right now it's so I'm partners in the business and the agency with myself, my two brothers, and my uncle. But my cousin joined 9 months ago doing mm-hmm. sales for print and digital. My other cousin, Jason, is interning right now. Mm-hmm. My father retired 2 years ago. So right now there's five. Mm-hmm. Jason's just an intern, so he'll be going back to school. So it'll be four. But there was really, to answer your question, there really was no vortex, honestly. I don't think my father, unless I'm just not remembering it, I don't remember him ever asking if I had any interest. I guess they wanted to see if I really wanted to come to the business. I would just naturally come to them. Uh-huh. And that's what happened. I mean, I, you know, during the high school breaks, like summer breaks, I would work at the company, just mm-hmm. helping with like data entry. Uh-huh. But honestly, there was never any push to come into the business. So
that's interesting. Well, yeah, yeah. It's usually subtle. It's usually not, I need you to work here. Well, sometimes it is, but in the end, I think it's great. I think family business is great. I think it's a great way to work with your family, but also if your parents or uncle or whatever put so much effort into something to be able to continue to grow it generation by generation, which yeah. I guess brings me to a question that you probably have already thought about before while we're on the topic, is the chance of failure of business between generations? And you probably know that the statistics of it. I think it's like first generation, it's like first to second, it's like 70% or maybe 30% chance of failure. And then like second to third, it's like 60% chance of failure. Have you guys done anything as a family business to address that over the years?
I mean, I don't know the exact stat, but you're right. There's between generations, there's often a failure rate. And I can't remember what generation they say kills the business, but I'm third generation. Hopefully it's not third generation. I don't think we're third. Shoot. Okay. Well, so far so good, but we'll see. Yeah, I mean, we're conscious of it. I think for us, we're very sales oriented. So we're always trying to get new clients, trying to service our clients, the existing clients. So we never get too comfortable even in good years. So it's always like this kind of like this paranoia in the back of my head here that we need more clients even when things feel like they're going well. Uh-huh. And we also have just honestly, we just have different strengths and weaknesses. So, you know, like my brother Scott, his strength is operations and finance. So we have all the bases covered. There's like, because honestly, like that's not my strength and that's not my brother and my uncle's strength. So my father was leaving, you know, there would have been this sort of like this void because he was very operational and finance oriented. So there would have been this void. But then my youngest brother, he had a career for 10 years in doing travel and finance, what have you, up in Massachusetts. But he came to join the business. And so that void was filled, unfortunately.
That's good. Well, you got to diversify based on your strengths. That's and I think, like you said, as long as you have the hunger to keep growing and the fire in your belly, because the original owner always has it. And then sometimes that can get lost generation, but it sounds like you guys still have it. Well, let's get on to, go ahead.
I was going to say, and diversifying too. You know, we had the print and then we added the digital. So diversifying as best as we can.
Well then let's get to marketing questions here, because, you know, I've worked with clients where all we do is door knocking, literally. I've done door hangers. I've done flyers with clients. I've done direct mail pieces and digital and social media only and radio. And so when you're working with a new client, how do you help them make a determination, since you do all the mediums? How do you make them a determination of where to spend their money?
Yeah, so the way we do it, so we're continuously fine-tuning, because the digital side of the business is still, I guess it's a startup. It's a startup within a bigger company. Mm-hmm. It's only 5 years old. And so if I look at how we're doing things now versus when we first started, it's crazy to see. It's almost like embarrassing to think about, like, the first year or two. Mm-hmm. So we're always trying to figure out how to onboard clients better and service them better, or what have you. And so, like, a latest addition to how we onboard clients is, when we have the initial kickoff with them, we talk about the access that we need, what questions we have. We do this whole positioning statement exercise. Mm-hmm. So we find out, like, what they sell, who do they sell to, what resonates with their target audience. Mm-hmm. And so once we paint that whole full picture, then it becomes more obvious as to what channels are going to work best for them, mm-hmm. whether it's just SEO. Obviously, budget comes into play. Mm-hmm. You know, but if your budget's very limited, obviously that's going to restrict the choices you can make. But that positioning statement really dictates, you know, what channels we're going to use, how much we're going to spend. Mm-hmm. And, you know, honestly, though, Josh, is that, you know, we do quarterly reviews mm-hmm. on our client. So sometimes it changes. Like, what we start with, it may not have been the right answer. And so we do every 3 months, we're looking at what's working, what's not. And then we'll just kind of make tweaks to the system, to, like, what we're doing for them. And so, sometimes it changes every 3 months, because just things sometimes don't work. And sometimes things start working after a few months, and then you want to put more money into it. So it's just like this evolving system, I guess you could say.
So I've had several used car dealerships. Some of them actually a lot of work with. So let's say you get a new used car dealership and they say, hey, we want to spend, $20,000 a month on advertising. And they've got some corner location. You're in New Jersey, right?
Yeah.
So, of course, we know that direct mail works, radio works. You know, would you sequence out? Would you do A/B testing, or because there's a lot of options for them, right? If they're going to spend, let's just say, $50,000 a month.
Yeah. So the dealerships is actually one of the verticals that we work with on the digital side, actually print and digital. Because the thing about dealerships is that they typically use all channels, because their whole strategy is just saturate what's called their PMA, like their local market. And so how much they have to spend depends on how big their PMA is. If their PMA is huge, they have to spend more, because it's more direct mail. They have to send out more emails. They have to send out more Facebook ads, et cetera. So in our experience, what works best for dealerships is that they're using all channels: direct mail, email, Facebook ads, Google ads. Mm-hmm. I don't think I'm forgetting anything there, but so it's a lot of an SEO. So they're using all channels. I think really what comes down to it is, like, the sequencing of are we going to push used cars? Are we going to push new cars? Are we going to push service and parts? So we'll sort of rotate the schedule based on what the dealership's goals are, because dealerships, and they're really, I think this applies to most businesses, what's important to them 1 month might be different the next month. And so we always have to match up what we're doing with what their goals are for that month. And some months they want to push just used cars. Next month it might be just service and parts. And so the marketing that we implement for them will reflect what their goals are for that month. That answers your question.
Yeah, no, it does. Since you work with both big companies and large companies, is there a big difference in the way that they spend their marketing dollars or their strategies? So let's just say if a company is doing $100 million a year versus one that's doing $500,000 a year, what do they have to think about differently with regards to their, their marketing choices?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest difference, I think, is, you know, because on the digital side, we're working with a lot of local businesses. And so obviously it's smaller budgets because they're focusing on a very small market. Mm-hmm. And some of the strategies will be different. Like, so for some of our national clients, we're going to put less emphasis on Google Maps optimization, like local strategies. It's obviously, if you're a local business, you want to saturate your local market as much as possible. And that's where Google Maps will come in. Maybe Waze advertising, advertising the GPS. So there's slight nuances there, but really, like, our bigger national clients, they're spending more in ads, they're spending more in direct mail because they need to reach, a bigger audience. So it just requires a bigger budget.
So I was reading through your bio, and there was a note here about five ways to drive leads with digital marketing. I don't know if you have that queued up in your mind or not, but like, what are those? So I can think of a few.
I can talk about that. So ways to drive leads with digital advertising. So SEO, search engine optimization, obviously. So we find is that SEO and paid search, they drive most of the leads. But there's a slight asterisk to that. So Facebook ads can drive leads as well. Mm-hmm. Or what I'm saying is that SEO and paid ads, like pay-per-click ads, they drive more leads for people that are interested in, like, services, for example. We still generate a lot of leads through Facebook ads, but it's more for, like, opt-ins to, like, something. So Facebook has this ad objective where you can, it's called lead formats, where you can easily collect someone's email address. So if you want to give them, like, a newsletter or what have you, it's a way to get that lead. So I still consider that a lead. It's just a different lead versus someone says, hey, I want to do business with you, and they're filling out your contact form. Versus someone that says, hey, here's my email address, I want your white paper. Still lead, both are leads, but just different varying degrees of leads. Mm-hmm. So SEO is definitely one way. Definitely you want a nice organic presence. Paid ads on Google, definitely important. We've had limited success with Bing advertising. So I'll still throw that out there because it doesn't mean that doesn't work. Mm-hmm. But Google ads for sure. Facebook and LinkedIn, definitely try their lead formats where you basically are collecting someone's email address. They, Facebook and LinkedIn, they pre-populate the person's information, and it makes it very, very easy just to collect that email address. Mm-hmm. And then I would say we're getting really big into video. Mm-hmm. So we bought all the fancy equipment now. That was our latest upgrade this year. We bought all the fancy equipment and we're going to do a lot more video. And then videos, you can use them in ads. You can use them on your website. Mm-hmm. They help increase the conversion rate on your website to get more leads. And so video, obviously video is huge. It's only going to get bigger and bigger. So that's the investment that we're making.
So let's say you own a ice cream shop in town, and it's always been known as ABC Ice Cream. Would you think that they should continue to use their brand ABC Ice Cream? Or do you think that the video, getting to know the owner and getting to know the, kind of like video of the people who work there, which one is more powerful nowadays?
I mean, I don't know if it's because it's a family business speaking here, but I love, we always recommend to our clients the transparency, like who's behind the curtain, that more personal effect of like, here's the owner, here's the team members, here's where we work, here's the company, as opposed to like, more of a corporate video that, is a little bit less personal, more cold. Mm-hmm. So we always push our clients, and sometimes our clients don't want to be in the video, but we always make our recommendation to, show your face, show the people that are behind the company, make that personal touch. I think that's really important. I think it's going to grow and grow. If people want to do business with people they like and trust and know and support the local community. And I know Amazon's ginormous and it's growing, but I think local business is still very important and you want to have that personal touch.
Well, this will probably be interesting for probably about maybe a little less than 10% of my, maybe 7% of my clients are digital marketing companies, small, medium, large. So this is kind of a question that you might be able to speak to. So you mentioned that you might recommend that they do videos of themselves. You might recommend this. And so they're giving you money. Let's just say they give you $10,000 a month to do advertising. And you recommend all these things you know are going to work. But they're like, I don't want to do that. And, I kind of like this other headline, or I kind of like these other things. And it's going to hurt them. And therefore, they're going to blame you for the poor results in the marketing ad spend that you spend. How do you navigate those waters where they're kind of hurting themselves?
Yeah, it's a great question. So big part of our job is really setting expectations for the client and helping them make the best decisions. Mm-hmm. Not that our ideas are always the best right out of the gate, but we always recommend what we think is going to be best based on just our experience here and other clients. honestly, if a client comes to us with what we think is not a great, is a bad idea, we're going to tell them, because ultimately what happens is if it doesn't work, then it comes back on us, and we don't want them to waste their money too, of course. If they're adamant though, we'll test it. And then, so we track phone calls, we track form submissions, we put everything into a nice dashboard. And so it's very clear what's working and what's not. Mm-hmm. So if they're adamant about testing it, we'll make it very clear that we do not think it's going to work. And sometimes clients will take our, you know, trust us and not do it. And if they do do it, then we just test it. We see if it works, and maybe they're right and then we're wrong. But we always vocalize our concerns because, you know, we look at, I guess we're their vendor, but we look at it more as like a partnership. And so we want to at least give our opinion and help them make the right decision. But yeah, sometimes it's not fun conversations because, like, how do you sell, tell someone they're, we think you're wrong without getting them, you know, angry? So it's more about using your words. Actually, it's funny you asked this question, because we just had a professional training for the team this week on client communication. And so just how to communicate to clients better.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm just thinking of problem clients. Well, here's the other problem. So sometimes when I'm working with a client, this is helping me out. So I'm working with a client and I say they should get some marketing services and they'll try a service out. They're afraid that they won't get an ROI fast enough for cash flow. So what is typically, setting expectations, what's typically the time period it takes before someone knows, is this marketing company actually helping? Is it working? Can I even tell? Do you have to give a marketing company 3 months, 6 months, 2 months? I mean, how long do you think is reasonable?
We always ask for 6 months. Mm-hmm. So 3 months is just not, because you think about it, depending on what you're doing, if someone's hiring a digital agency for SEO, content, social media, all this stuff, there's a lot to get going. There's a lot to set up in the beginning. The setup could really last the whole first month. There might be some things happening like week two, week three, but there's a lot going on. So the actual marketing doesn't start until really month two. Mm-hmm. So 3 months is just not enough time. So I would always say 6 months, but if they can give us a year, that's even better. But I know that's probably a lot to ask. So I would say 6 months. And that's the way we actually, not to get into like legal stuff here, but that's the way we structure our contracts, you know, like month to month for the first 6 months. Because we don't want them to feel locked in, but you know, it's that time period. We just need that time to show them results, but we don't want them to be locked in. But we set the expectation that it is month to month for the first 6 months, but mm-hmm. really you're not going to make a decision on if this is working or not until 6 months.
So then what should an owner do if they need to, so I've got a client right now, a chiropractor, right? And she wants new patients because she just hired another chiropractor in the practice, right? So they need twice as many clients now. So if they go out and they get some digital marketing services, should they say, gosh, well, we don't really know if this is working for potentially 6 months, so we're going to need to drop, I don't know, let's just say $3,000 a month, $18,000, $20,000 to even see if this is working. And I guess what I'm trying to get at in this question is there's a lot of small business owners who just don't have $20,000 to put at a gambling table. How do they know? What are the early signs of success? And how do they know how to make that good choice there?
Yeah, I would say if a client had, in that situation, I would always recommend starting off with Google Ads first, because here's the thing, I said 6 months overall for the overall campaign, but if you're just doing SEO, it could take a year, especially now. Back in 2003, when I first started here, honestly, SEO was very easy. It was all about just building backlinks. Mm-hmm. Didn't matter how crappy, how many, just build the backlinks with the right anchor text and it worked. Uh-huh. That is a much different game now. And it takes usually 12 plus months to see mm-hmm. results with SEO that is even exciting. And then it builds from there and it's more long-term strategy. At last, if you stop working with a digital agency, the results continue, but it takes a while. So I would say to that question, Josh, I would say start with Google Ads mm-hmm. because there's buyer intent. Someone has a need, they're typing in chiropractor near me or what have you. And the traffic is going to be almost immediate. You have a lot of flexibility. It's pretty clear if it's working or not because you're going to track your phone calls. You're going to track your form submissions. Mm-hmm. So you can make a quicker, with Google Ads, you might be able to say 3 or 4 months in if it's worth continuing. You might not need a full 6 months. Mm-hmm. So that's what I would say. I wouldn't even say social media because you want to get in front of people that have intent, that need a chiropractor. Mm-hmm. And so if they're looking to start with a limited budget and they need to make a, I can't think of anything else to recommend better than Google Ads.
Okay.
In our experience.
Yeah, well, I think the for those who don't know much about marketing and do want to make a choice, I think you're kind of really hitting on the fact that each of these mediums matter. They can work together, but some mediums, maybe more money upfront, pay back quicker, right? That there's a faster response rate. So Google Ad, fast response rate, SEO could be a better investment, but you're not going to see much for a year. So you have to be ready to understand what kind of investment you're making. And again, it might be a better investment, but it's a long-term investment. So if you can't wait a year to get some leads, then maybe not the first starting point.
And you mentioned something about the synergy. You are right. I mean, it sounds like it's like a sales pitch that there's synergy and you should use this for all the channels. But there is actually truth to that, because, for example, just to give you two examples, you know, as part of Google Pay-Per-Click, you could do remarketing so that when someone leaves a site, they see your banners browsing the internet. If you've ever put anything in your cart in Amazon, it'll haunt you for the rest of your life, and that's remarketing. It follows you around. Mm-hmm. And so remarketing is part of Google Ads. So anything you're doing, whether it's SEO, social media advertising, email marketing, you're driving traffic back to your site. And you need that remarketing to bring them back. If you're not doing Google Ads, that remarketing is not going to be there, and you're not going to have a second opportunity to stay top of mind with that person. Mm-hmm. Also, we usually see when we're running a lot of Facebook ads for clients, even paid ads, really social media ads content, we'll see an increase in their organic, because if someone repeatedly sees a Facebook ad for a company, generally what can happen is they'll go to Google and they'll type in more information about that company. So mm-hmm. we usually see a spike in organic when we do social media ads. So they all kind of feed off each other. So there definitely is some synergy. We usually see the best results when the client's using all channels. Doesn't mean they're using us for all channels. Mm-hmm. It means that maybe we're doing SEO and paid search, but then they're doing Facebook and Instagram and some other things like email on their end, and collectively mm-hmm. it amplifies results.
Well, so when someone's making a marketing choice in general, does it make sense to go with a company that does it all, or to pick one company for social media and one company for direct mail, one company for digital marketing services, and then another company that does copywriting for your website? Or how should someone navigate that kind of those choices?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, to have a special, if you're going to hire let's say you're doing four channels and you're going to hire a specialist in each channel, I definitely see the benefit there, because if they're truly the expert in whatever channel that is, then there's definitely some benefits there. As the client, you got to think that you're managing four different vendors, and when that they may or may not mind, you know, and then you might have something like they're pointing fingers at each other because it's not their fault. It's, you know, it's not our fault. It's their fault. But I definitely see the benefits there. Now, obviously, my answer is going to be a little biased because we do everything in house. So I'll speak on the benefits of why I think it's good to go with the company that does it all. Mm-hmm. It's because, you know, we do team meetings so basically the way we're structured is we have specialists for SEO, specialists for paid search, social media, et cetera. And so when a client's using us for all those services, the team is working together on that client. So right before we got on the call, I was passing by one of our rooms here, and there was four or five or team members. They were meeting about a specific client, going over keyword ideas for SEO and paid search. The keyword ideas, they're going to use them in the content marketing for the blog topics. So that synergy, like the team is literally meeting about one client, talking about what they're going to be doing. You don't have that if you're working with different specialists at different companies. So we try to make it put emphasis here on, you know, all the teams getting together on a client to try to share ideas and share results. Mm-hmm. So to me, that's like a major, major benefit. And mm-hmm. like I said, obviously I'm biased because, you know, we're an agency, but.
No, that makes sense. I'm just curious because there's a lot of options out there, and it's difficult to navigate and to make those kind of choices, but I can kind of see the pros and cons. So I know we're kind of running low on time, and I've kind of taken you all over the map here. Is there any question that I didn't ask you, I should have asked you, that you want to leave the audience with before we sign off?
Can I go into left field?
Sure, yeah, go wherever you want to go. It's your choice.
Yeah, I think I mentioned this on the pre-call. Really big in self-improvement, you know?
Let's do it.
So I'm not going to go too deep into the woods here, but it's just been major for me. We went through a period in 2017 where things were not going our way for new business, just a lot happening. And we had to make some changes with the clients that we were going after and our processes and stuff like that, just the nature of business, you know? And at that time I started getting big into, cause I was kind of like you know, felt like the world was falling, the ceiling was falling on top of me. And I was like, what am I going to do here? And so I just started to get big into self-improvement. And I'm not saying that turned things around, but it was it's a big part of my life. So started working out more, boxing, but I started a morning routine. That's been key for me, a morning routine with gratitude and meditation, a little bit of exercise, just a positive mindset type stuff. Mm-hmm. And so it's been a big game changer for me. So I think that, in addition to some of the changes we made here, mm-hmm. it just, things started to turn around. And since late 2017, we've been on a nice upward trajectory. And I always preach about, you know, having morning routines and just working on yourself, I guess is the thing, you know, work on yourself and it'll pay dividends in your business.
No, I think that's really good advice. And we didn't even explore any of those topics. And I know we talked about that ahead of time. But in terms of ROI on investment, that's what I always tell people is that, yeah, you can invest in all these things, but if you invest in yourself, you're going to get that ROI every second of every day. So it's worth the investment. It'll definitely pay back, especially as a leader, like in your case with the team underneath you. Your team needs you to lead well. Actually, hey, that's a good question as a follow-up. So as a leader, you said you started off leading one, which was yourself. Now you got a team. Any leadership lessons you've kind of learned along the way of actually having subordinates as opposed to just yourself?
Yeah, that's been actually a huge change for me because I was used to being by myself for 10 years. And I'm like, you know, I lean more towards introvert. I don't consider myself like a natural leader, though I think I've got some qualities of it because I have a growth mindset and I want to do a better job. So I think that's a big starting point. What I have learned is, well, what I said before, you have to work on yourself because I have to show up the best I can every day for myself, but for the team here, best I can, you know, and that's always, I think that's going to be a process that's always going to be, I'm going to be trying to get better and better at. But I think too, being transparent with your team, make sure that they can come to you. Mm-hmm. They feel comfortable. You're not leading with like an iron fist. They feel like they can come to you about anything. I think investing in your team too has been huge. We invest in our team in terms of, I take them out to lunch every once in a while, like one-on-one to get to know them better. Mm-hmm. We do professional training every month, just put back, you know, give back to them, not give back to them, but like invest in them. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of things culturally here that I think makes a big difference, like monthly lunches that the company pays for, in addition to the lunches I do. Mm-hmm. We do birthday breakfasts every time someone has a breakfast, we do a birthday, we mm-hmm. get together for breakfast. We do quarterly team events. We're fairly flexible in the work schedule, like coming and going. So that's been a big difference. That's been a big thing too. But I think really, if I had to, like, if you say, well, what's one thing, because you're rambling, I would say it's investing in them. Yeah.
Okay. So good things, invest in yourself first, and then out of the surplus, invest in the team. Okay, that's good. Your lead, you can't just leave them behind. Very cool. All right, so where can people find out more about you, Ryan, and your business?
Yeah, so I set up a special landing page for your audience. On there, they can connect with me on LinkedIn, but also there's an offer for a free video analysis. So essentially what I'll do is I'll go through their website via video, and just look at things in terms of SEO, just call to actions, take a look at their social media, you know, just like a 10-minute video, just give them my ideas and what I think they're doing well and what could be improved on. And that offer is on, it's valentine.com/work the system, valentine.com/work the system.
Okay, well, the price is right, free video review. I might take you up on that. I think that's a great, great thing. Hopefully y'all check it out, be watching the podcast. And Ryan, thanks again for being here. And thanks everybody for joining me this week, joining me and Ryan. Join us next week. We'll be interviewing another guest like Ryan, an expert in their field or an author, speaker, or maybe one of my past clients, but somebody to help you grow your business so you can make more and work less. And if you want to join us live, where this is a Facebook Live, want to join us live, make sure to go to our Facebook page and like it. Then you can be, you'll get announced when we go live with one of these podcast interviews. And then also, if you want a copy of that book right there behind me, signed by Sam Carpenter himself, give us a review. Leave us a review on either wherever you watch this, whether it's iTunes or you're watching it on Facebook or wherever it might be, YouTube. Leave us a review and give us a an email at info@workthesystem.com with a review. And then we will be mailing out one book a week to the winner of the week. All right, everybody. We'll see you next week.